I still remember the chuckles from my high school career day many years ago when I said it might be cool to be a forest ranger. Everybody wants to be a forest ranger, came back to me after the chuckling. Our next guest got to be a forest ranger in a place that became officially designated wilderness while he was there. Ronan Demily worked in the Trinity Alps in Northern California for many years. He's written a series of vignettes, both prose and poetry, in a book called Pacific Crest Trail, Mountain Encounters of a Wilderness Ranger. Ronan, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
You did write a previous book, but it was nothing quite like this. Tell us about that.
My previous book was called People of the Pitt River Nation, and that goes way back. I was in my 20s, just out of college, and I found myself drawn to a lot of the local history. I ended up working for the county library as an oral historian, and that got me into research libraries, and eventually somebody picked me out at the library and said, hey, I have the job for you. It introduced me basically to the Northern California Indian tribes. And I ended up working for local Indians for education for 2 years, documenting mostly Wintu and Pitt River Indians and telling their story through their voices.
So you got to tell somebody else's story, and this time you're telling your own, essentially.
True, yes, and merging a few of those stories into mine.
So a few people might consider you a very lucky person. I mean, how does one get a job as a wilderness ranger?
That's a good question. Nowadays, it's mostly volunteer. So that's the sad thing, is that the whole idea of it as a career has somewhat diminished. The wilderness ranger concept at the Forest Service level has been mostly taken over, as I say, by organizations. In fact, the Pacific Crest Trail Association takes a major responsibility with maintaining the trail now. Actually, we have a local group here, Siskiyou Mountain Club. They do a lot of contracting to help maintain the trail. But as far as actually overseeing the trail in a ranger kind of perspective, it doesn't really happen as much anymore. You have to go to the national park system to actually see some of the rangers that have a little bit of an upgrade with their rank and their ability to work year-round.
That's an interesting point you bring up. And in fact, we have talked to Gabe Howe at the Siskiyou Mountain Club several times about the things they do in maintaining trails. And,
yep.
and the question comes up, it's like, why are you doing this? It's like, because there's not federal budget for the
correct
kind of trail maintenance that that is required.
Yeah. And the two have gone hand in hand because, remember, this area was known as a logging area over the last, post-World War II, really. And when that diminished, then most of the funds that were coming into the forest as a result of cutting the timber has diminished the size of the Forest Service budget, allowing for less and less. And they figure that they put the resources towards the things that are high maintenance, such as campgrounds.
Interesting. So the forest is less geared to logging, but also less geared to having money then for things that
correct
don't involve logging.
Yep.
Wow. So what was an average day like? What year did you start doing the wilderness ranger work?
Gosh, I started way back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 70s, it's not much different now, but the amount of equipment available was very limited. We had these very chunky radios about the size of a brick, and we only had three for a crew of five. So if you went into a highly populated area, they gave you a radio that worked maybe a third to a half of the time. Very poor. You also got dropped off at a trailhead, didn't have enough trucks, so we got dropped off, and then we got picked up. You'd make an arrangement, be picked up on the other side of the mountains in about 4 or 5 days, depending on the length of your tour duty. So it was kind of fun because once you're there, you're on your own. You know, we didn't carry pistols or anything like that. We were out there just to engage with the public, try to educate people about the wilderness, try to support on the ground stuff such as minor trail repairs, cleaning up campgrounds, putting up signs, doing health testing, you know, water testing. So those are the major activities.
So it sounds like pretty much anything that came along that required a public interface with the trail that you could do something about.
Yep, and reporting fires. Mm-hmm. That's the other big one. We were really required to be the eyes and the ears of the fire crews out there.
So talk about the Trinity Alps. I mean, they're right here in our area, and much has been said about them. And you've obviously written a book here about your experiences up there. But,
yeah.
I mean, can words do justice to the Trinity Alps?
Ah, boy, that's a good question. I'm just seeing them in my picture of my mind as you're talking to me. We live in such a beautiful area that you can imagine one or two steps above where we live. It is beautiful. They're called the Alps for a reason. They do look like the Swiss Alps. They're pointed peaks, glacierettes, mountain meadows, springs, waterfalls, beautiful camping areas that are dispersed, so there isn't a high population of people visiting them. In fact, I was very paranoid for many years telling people what they looked like because it was so beautiful. I thought there'd be a trampling of people up there. But, you know, over the last few years, I think backpacking still is very popular, and it's getting a new interest and rage with books coming out and movies coming out and interest in the Pacific Crest Trail and backpacking in general. But I would say, remember, this is a big territory. This is 500,000 square acres. So it's an area, I think I mentioned in my book, it's about 35 by 50 miles. So it's a lot of territory. So you can go for days. There's some places you can go and not see anybody still, which is pretty rare. But most of the places you see a few people in a day.
And it's fairly rugged terrain. I mean, from the get-go, your book makes it clear that there are some treacherous places. Have you had some fairly hairy moments in the Trinity Alps yourself?
I think probably the hairiest moments have been in the spring. It's when most of the deaths occur in the mountains. Usually there's about three or four people who die in the mountains in the summer. And it's mostly because of snowmelt. People don't recognize how fast the water's really coming down. They try to cross with heavy packs. They're off balance. They're not used to it. If you've ever fallen into water with 80 pounds or 50 pounds or even 30 pounds on your back, you know what it does. It's hard to get up.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a few of those kind of experiences where there was no way around it. I had to cross the water. But fortunately, I was fortunate in that time. I've never, you know, injured myself or had any problems like that.
But you did have to pick up some people who had fallen out there?
We've had a few. In fact, one of my books talks a little bit about a death in the Alps. And so it's not the highlight of the summer. You know, it's pretty rare. I would say the main thing that you notice is a lot of happy people. People who have done their homework before they go in, they know a little bit about what to expect. They've taken the lightweight food, they've gotten the equipment, and they've planned it out enough. And with things like cell phones now, it's changed entirely. And that's probably, you know, the difference in my book and the guidebooks that are out there now. My book is really not a guide to what's going on how to find the trails, where they are, you know, what you need to pack, that kind of thing. My book is more about what are those experiences once you get out there? What is life really like? Many times now, Pacific Crest Trail is sort of, people associate it with like I-5.
Mm-hmm.
You get on and you do your 20 miles a day driving and you stay in a motel and then you get up, you drive the next day. And that's a lot of people, a lot of traffic on the trail now is like that. And I like that. That's nice. It's a good way to go. It's a good experience for a lot of those people because it's a chance to really do the physical side of the Pacific Crest Trail. And that's like 3 months of doing it from Mexico to Canada. My book is more about what happens if you try to enjoy just a segment of it. And the segment I've chosen is Northern California, Trinity County, Siskiyou County, Shasta County, bordering into Trinity, and then back into Oregon. There's one story in Oregon. The majority of them are down a little bit to the south of us.
We're talking to Ronan Demily about his book, Life as a Wilderness Ranger. It's actually called Pacific Crest Trail, Mountain Encounters of a Wilderness Ranger, and it's just out, just recently published. You can join the conversation as we talk about Ronan's experiences as a wilderness ranger and the things he got to see and do and smell and hear and all kinds of great experiences out there on the trail. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Good heavens, you admit to a favorite place on the Pacific Crest Trail. That's unusual for people who love the PCT.
But I didn't call out where it was. You notice that part?
That's true, I guess.
Yeah, there is a spot that's I don't know, there's certain times of the year, certain places you can just go, wow, and just don't want to move. You just want to sit there and say, this is about as good as it gets. And I actually have a few favorite places, but that was one that I wrote about.
There's a story in which you admit that you write of being human in a place where there simply are not many people, and you're sort of the minority species there. Well, I wonder what that feels like.
Right. I think what I was getting at is when you hike, we usually set goals like I'm going to hike to this lake, or I'm going to go up here and go fishing, or I'm going to, you know, do this loop trail. And what happens when you just sit there and you just wait for the wilderness to come to you? you start noticing things, you start hearing things, and it becomes a different place. And that was kind of what I was getting at in that particular short story.
So you were present at the birth of the wilderness area designation for the Trinity Alps. I mean, those were different times. I mean, how long and tough a process was that?
It was very difficult. It was difficult because there was a disconnect between mostly urbanites who could see the vision of the future of what was coming to these rural areas. Logging was at a maximum time, and mostly ruralites were seeing it was becoming an end to the future they envisioned. And so it was a difficult time of people getting together and trying to figure out what that future looked like, because economies were based upon it. People's images of what should happen in these blank spots on the map out in the middle of nowhere. And so it was a lot of education, both sides. And I think that ultimately the process isn't over. You know, we see other areas that need to be protected in wilderness areas. We also see communities that need to have a future.
Well, that's a really interesting thing you point out there, though, that it's the people who from the urban areas, people who live far away from the rural areas, who see the value of preserving them, which is one of the things where rural and urban people get into crossways with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's it. It's just your everyday experience. If you go out into the field, so to speak, to do your work, you have a different feeling about what happens out there than if you are working in an office somewhere and you get 2 weeks off and you get a chance to go somewhere. Those are two different visions of what happens at the same place, perhaps.
Grab your headphones, because I want to bring a question in here from one of our listeners. And this is Karen in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ronan Demily.
Hi, how are you guys today?
We're doing well. Thanks for calling.
Good.
So what's up?
I would like to ask Ron specifically something about the Trinity Alps. I was so impressed with his descriptions of it looking like Switzerland and the mountains and the meadows, and especially in this time when we're not traveling and trying to avoid getting on airplanes and such, I'd really like to try some of the places that he could recommend up there, and I'm wondering if he would have something that he could recommend for as kind of an entry point, maybe a beginner, someone not as experienced as him. Mm-hmm. To get up and do it.
All right, the Trinity Alps starter set. Good question there, Karen. Thanks for that.
Well, that is a good question. And in anticipation of that, I was thinking about this coming over here. I was thinking I was going to invite people to join me for a hike this summer and to show, you know, an easy entryway. You know, just a short day hike on the Pacific Crest Trail. I don't know where it's going to be yet because I haven't planned it out. But if people are interested, they can just send me an email at my address, which is tangleblueproductions@gmail.com.
Tangleblueproductions?
Yep, @gmail.com. And what I will do is I will go ahead and, you know, connect with the people who have connected with me, and we'll set up a time this summer that I would guess it's going to be an hour drive from Ashland. If you're calling from Ashland, which I think you are, then that would be about an hour's drive. That's some of the prettiest areas. I mean, the Pacific Crest Trail is close to us. It's right here at Mount Ashland. So you can do that on your own. So if you really want a beginner hike, I would say go to Mount Ashland and get on the trail there, because it's got, you know, parking right there. It's easy to find. Mm-hmm. There's signage everywhere.
Crosses right over the road up to the Mount Ashland.
So if you want to practice the hiking part, if you want to see the Trinity Alps, come with me this summer. We'll do a day hike.
Dewey in Ashland also called in just to say that he wants to verify that the Trinity Alps are beautiful. So you got that going on. You know, come back to the wilderness designation, though, because you described this scene in one of your stories in the books about having a congressional delegation with people from, was it Oregon, California, and Ohio?
Correct, yes.
Uh-huh. And
want me to recreate that in 2 seconds? I can.
Sure.
Yeah, well, this had to do with, I was working for the Forest Service as a wilderness ranger, but at the time, it was just a primitive area. It didn't have a wilderness designation. And so it was all kind of tenuous as to what was happening. There was a lot of logging going on. The rangers were in charge of getting out the cut, which means to cut as much as they could. It was on the books, at least, it was appearing that a lot of money was being made, although most of that money later was found out to have gone back into putting roads in. So it kind of negated that big profit. But anyway, the congressional committee of those three congressmen landed right at the edge of the Trinity Alps in a helicopter with their staff of about, there was about 20 people on that helicopter. It was a massive helicopter. Basically, we set up a teach-in, you know, an educational opportunity. We had charts. We had information. We had actually, someone had hiked in a dry board. We had actually drawn out all this information. And so they could sit and they could look. We had binoculars. They could see from a high point up in the mountains where this wilderness area would be and what it would look like. And little did I know that the local rangers were invited to come, which were all my bosses. And they saw me there, and I thought, well, that's it. That's my last time working here.
Not a career move then.
Yeah. So I was very surprised to see them there, and they kind of scowled at everything I told them about, you know, the beauty of the mountains and why we needed to protect it and why we shouldn't put logging roads in. And ultimately, we had to wait another 6 months or so. It was 1984. It was finally passed, the Wilderness Act, and the Trinity Alps Wilderness Area was created. And even though I was concerned about my job, my ranger was bumped up and left the district, and I got my job back.
All right, so everybody's safe there.
Yep.
The book is called Pacific Crest Trail, Mountain Encounters of a Wilderness Ranger. It's by Ronan Demily. He was by Ron as well. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. You were scheduled for Bloomsbury Books, 6 o'clock on Thursday. Is that still on?
Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that's tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow at 7 o'clock. I'll be at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland, Oregon for reading and book signing, and be happy to meet folks.
Okay. With events canceling left and right, I have to ask everybody who comes through about whether their
right.
events are still on.
It's a small crowd.
Yeah, it's very small.
I imagine
lots of room between people there.
Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. And then I'll be doing also another one later in April with Siskiyou Mountain Club.
Okay. So you have, I think you opened up to Champagne Circle, which is one of the more interesting stories in the book. Is that what you got in front of you?
I do. Yeah.
Read a bit of that?
Just by coincidence.
Yeah.
Do we have time to read a little?
A little bit of it, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I should read a poem first.
Okay, sure.
Because I've scattered poems throughout, because this book was written in a strange sort of way. I didn't really have a structure. I just started writing. And some of them came out as short stories. There's 30 short stories, and there's about a half dozen poems. So this is one just called Pacific Crest Trail. To wander the trail among the wild mountains, you don't need to own them. You do need a free mind and an open heart. The firs beside the streams are always green, but the granite rocks remain sparkling white. You might miss your friends by day, but the moon will speak to you at night.
Well, have you written much poetry before now?
Some. Mm-hmm. Some, yeah. So it just seemed appropriate to kind of put those two together.
It's a place that inspires poetry, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this was written, things like the poems were written over the last few years. And I started the short stories many years ago and then finished it about a year and a half ago, the book. So it's just been out just a couple of weeks now. So do we still have enough time to...
Yeah, just a couple paragraphs from Champagne Circle.
Okay. I always plodded slowly along the rocky, remote trail to feel the spirit of the Wintu Indians that spend thousands of summers up here in the upper meadows. I stopped at each creek crossing, looking for tangled blue rocks matrixed with blue veins. I paused at the sight of a hawk in flight. The spot is snowy cold in winter, but paradise in summertime. Springs gush cold water, and meadows attract the big, hardy bucks that make it up through the granite and red rocks. Wintu Indian camps lined the small creeks that run through these meadows. Gigantic red-barked cedars still grow along the creeks. I always scanned the ground, looking for arrowheads reflecting in the sun, obsidian chips littering the ground, and at the creek's edge, maidenhair ferns grow. And up in the forest, I see bear grass and ferns were items collected for basket making. As I near the basin, I see the orange and the black spotted leopard lily that surrounds this place and two rocks apart. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit.
Sure.
This is now U.S. Forest Service grazing land in the middle of wilderness. I was there as a wilderness ranger checking on the grazing cattle. In front of me, I noticed not 12 of them as usual, but perhaps 25 or 30, full-bellied, slow-plodding, bell-necked, plastic ear-tagged munchers trampling the ruined meadow. Over in the fir forest, below the red cedars, near the camps that I visited each summer, sat the permittee in a folding chair. He was wearing a starched, white shirt and a cowboy hat and boots, sitting under a canvas sunshade. There was Mr. Circle Champagne himself. As I approached, he looked a little startled, offered me to join him in this midday cold glass of champagne from his nearby cooler. No, thank you, I said. I'm going to skip ahead again.
Okay, why don't we stop it there?
Okay.
But there's a good taste for it. So Mr. Champagne Circle, what is he doing up there, just watching the cattle?
Well, that's the funny, sad thing of today is that the permits were a very important part of the development of this part of the world where people could extend their ability to have their cattle range in the high country in the middle of summer. But now it's sort of a luxury. These permits come up and the people kind of bid on them to get the permits to graze their cattle up there just as kind of a status thing, to be honest with you. Hmm. This guy was from the Bay Area, and he was there just grazing his cattle.
Mr. Circle Champagne, as you call him. Yeah, a lot of interesting stories like that. There's another one where somebody called Bump in the Road, where somebody tried to take a car in there and didn't fare so well and didn't get a lot of help from Ronan either. So all kinds of fun stuff going on there. The book is called Pacific Crest Trail, Mountain Encounters of a Wilderness Ranger. It's the work of Ronan Demily, who spent many years working up in the Trinity Alps. He'll be reading the book and talking to people tomorrow, Thursday, March 12th at Bloomsbury Books in Ashland. 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Ronan, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you.